today in Movie World as we talk about The Dead Don't Die and The Last Black Man in San Francisco. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And ESD as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of the airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Hello.
Greetings, all.
As Rashmi eats a Marconi almond.
Marcona.
Is that what they are?
Mm-hmm.
What's a Marconi almond? Something I made
something
up.
Something electronic.
Yeah, the Marconi theorem.
That may be the crunching that we listen to as
Sorry.
We go through this. No, please, don't swallow them whole. She's desperately trying not to crunch now. Yes, we have a rather healthier range of snacks today. Well, healthier from the perspective of they don't contain sugars.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Not
Joe's
necessarily.
Joe's obsessed with food at the minute.
Oh, aren't we all? Oh, but
well, some of us are obsessed with eating it. And some others, Joe, are obsessed with analysing.
Yes, that I'm
the composition.
I've become very intrigued with the whole dietary toxic environment in which we live generally these days. My main issue is sugar. They put it in everything. Like, it's in absolutely everything.
Even in hidden places.
I went to buy mustard the other day, and I literally, in, like, the supermarket of, like, you know, 79 varieties of mustard, I found one that did not contain added sugar. I'm like, why is there sugar in mustard? What's that about?
Because otherwise, there'll be a hole in your tongue.
Well, clearly they do it because it tastes good. My theory and my conspiracy theory about all this stuff are it's because sugar is addictive. Like we crave that kind of sweetness that's very rare in nature, and so they put it in everything. Bastards! And as a result, we're all diabetic and fat. So I'm trying to avoid both of those things. Anyhow,
it's a noble endeavor.
It is a noble endeavor.
Especially given my family history and genetics, so that's the issue behind that.
And the Marcona almonds are actually very good.
They're excellent.
They're delicious, they're nutritious, and they're very low carb.
And they're sauteed in rosemary. I wouldn't think to put almonds in rosemary, but
it's so good, right? So good. It makes me want to lick my fingers, which is not very attractive.
I've been doing
on
it.
A table of two other it. People, but
that's another reason we don't do video.
Yes.
See us chomping through snacks.
Yes.
All right, let's move on. We've got a couple of movies to talk about, but before we go there, we'll do something we haven't done in a while, which is I can't find anything to watch on VOD. And this is our segment where if you haven't heard us talk about this for a while, we often get the question from friends and family and people we interact with, I don't know what to watch on video on demand. And it used to be just Netflix, but now there's Amazon and Prime and 1,001 other streaming services. So choice has never been better, but as we've always often talked about, the interfaces aren't great and unearthing those little gems can be difficult. So, guys, what is on your VOD
so
playlists?
Mine is Thor Ragnarok.
Excellent.
Which I was late to the Thor party and I never really watched the original, but when I kept hearing that Ragnarok was a really good movie and it was getting a lot of good press, Joe and I finally went to see it. And I was so happy because it's such a fun, joyful superhero movie. And I believe a large reason of that is not only Chris Hemsworth's great comedic performance, but Taika Waititi's direction. And I'm a big fan of Taika Waititi. And for those of you who don't know, he's famous for doing
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows. And he's also done Flight of the Conchords, I believe. He was...
And he also
did the weird movie about Wonder People?
What was
correct,
it?
Yeah, the Wonder People, I think it was. Yeah, so I just find him to be such a smart, genius, understated actor, producer, director, and he's got such an impressive CV. If you look him up on IMDb, he's contributed to so many things that you wouldn't even realize. Just an absolute comedic genius, so... Thor Ragnarok is the one on my list.
He has an ability to infuse fun in everything he does.
But with a real dose of reality, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we always say the things that make us laugh the most are those things which are real. And he has this innate ability to find the humor in reality, I think, which makes everything he does so superior.
Yes, Dee, what's my in your list?
My pick is a movie from another exceptional filmmaker. In 2011, his movie was nominated for Best Foreign Film Oscar, and he won it. Since then, he won a second Best Foreign Film Oscar, and his name is Asghar Farhadi, and he's an Iranian director, and there's some amazing movies coming out of Iran, but he's probably the most celebrated, you know, at least in this past decade. And that movie, which won him his first Oscar, is called A Separation, which I really strongly recommend that people watch if they haven't already. It's been on Netflix for a long time, and it's going to go away one of these days. And that movie is about, it's about many, many things, but it does this amazing thing where it gives you a certain number of facts, and you as the viewer make some judgments about people, and then some more facts are revealed to you, and your assessment of those people completely changes. And it kind of makes a beautiful case for how the extent of what we know completely alters our judgment of individuals. It's a beautiful movie. But that's not the movie I'm recommending. The movie I'm recommending...
You just snuck one in. That's no, so cheeky, Azdi.
It's a new movie by Asghar Farhadi, who is an Iranian director who has made this movie, which is set in Spain, and it is in Spanish language, and it has some of the best actors right now. Latin actors right now. So it's called Everybody Knows, and it has Javier Bardem, Penelope Cruz, and Ricardo Darín, and those are three big titans in Latin cinema.
Great choice, Yazdi.
And we saw this movie at the San Diego International Film Festival. I'm frankly surprised.
Just before we watched The Favourite.
Correct. It was either the same day or the day before.
I think it was another day, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm surprised this movie came to Netflix right away. It should have played in the cinemas, but it's so good.
So good.
On the face of it, it's a thriller. It's about Penelope Cruz's character comes back to her hometown for a wedding in her family. And her daughter comes along with her. Her two daughters come along with her. And then her older daughter goes missing. So it's a thriller on the face of it. But underneath, there's this
so much
great
more.
Commentary about families and wealth and inequalities within people who are part of the same clan, and how your past influences you, and you know, it's so beautiful.
The choices you make. It's so good.
It's really a very fine film. Everybody Knows. You owe yourself to watch it.
Yes. And I think we mentioned this a few podcasts ago because it did make an appearance for a very short period in the cinemas, mm-hmm. but I'm so happy that everyone will get an opportunity to watch this. Such a good movie. And it's one where you are transported to the place where the movie's set. Yeah. It's set in modern time.
Yeah.
But you are transported to a little village.
In Spain. Where,
which is just glorious. Yeah. Really good movie. Joe, you have to watch this.
Okay.
Yeah. And it does the same thing. You are being exposed to all of these characters. And you know what you know about them. And then, you know, the movie plays really interestingly with how certain pieces of information is, you know, gets divulged to you. So it just works wonderfully as a pure thriller, but there's all this other stuff going on. And for some reason, Penelope Cruz is always so good in Spanish speaking, or so much better in Spanish speaking roles.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Terrific stuff.
Your pick?
My pick isn't quite out yet as of time of recording, but we will be out, I think, on June 26th. And that's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, brilliant.
So good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so this is, like, we're all fatigued, right, with superhero movies. And how many versions of Spider-Man have been done? Like, there's umpteen versions that spring to mind immediately. Sam Raimi, the 70s TV show, the cartoon from back in the day. We've had the Tobey Maguire and now the Andrew Garfield versions. And who's the new Spider-Man? Tom Holland. So we're done with Spider-Man, right? So when this movie popped up at the end of last year, almost without fanfare, Completely blew me away. It's an animation, but don't let that put you off. This is probably one of my favorite films of last year. It didn't quite make my top three.
I think to call it an animation is almost underselling it in some way.
It is, yeah. It's just a great
story. It's more than an animation, period. Right? It's like, almost like a graphic novel.
It is, yeah.
A graphic animation.
It is, and it has a very unusual visual style. I think, you know, people were kind of scratching their heads in the theater thinking that they forgot to put on 3D glasses. So it's visually and texturally just a stunning piece of work. But more to the point, it has a great story. It has really endearing characters and is totally worth an hour or two of your time. So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, get it when it comes out on Netflix. I've actually purchased this movie. I thought it was so good. So it's already part of our personal collection, but stunning piece of work. And
I mean, it's almost a masterclass on how to reinvent a tired premise or an overtold story, how to just by sheer creative will make yep. something new and fresh out of an old story. It's just, it's all kinds of wonderful. It's
epically stunning. Okay, so three movies are Thor Ragnarok, Everybody Knows, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Plenty of stuff on VOD. Do check that stuff out.
And I wanted to mention that two of the movies that we've seen at recent film festivals, the movie Halston about the fashion designer of the 70s and 60s fame, and the movie American Woman that we had mentioned during Toronto Film Festival, are now both playing in cinemas. And both of those, I think Halston more than American Woman, were very liked by us. And it's always nice when we can recommend something that we've seen at a film festival. So happy that you can all get a chance to watch those as well. Halston is by far my favorite of the two. Joe, this was one that I had dragged you to during Tribeca, and I think you were pleasantly surprised by how good it was, right?
Yeah, no, I mean...
It's about fashion...
I mean, any well-made biopic. I mean, people are inherently interesting. People who race are kind of these in lofty heights where they're revered, and you know, there's always something behind the curtain. And this is a great look behind the curtain of somebody with whom I was really generally unfamiliar, but it took me into that world of fashion. And if I was to pick on it, I'd say it's a little conventional, but. These things are always very, very interesting. And
I didn't see Halston, but so I will defend American Woman, which is just such a good vehicle, I think, for Sienna Miller, who kind of, you know, often gets, or through early part of her career, was kind of dragged down by a lot of the kind of paparazzi and, you know, the celebrity kind of dirt. But, you know, given the opportunity, she can really shine and again, similar to Everybody Knows, she's dealing with a mother, you know, who has a missing daughter and how she deals with that. And Christina Hendricks is in here as well.
Yep, Aaron Paul.
And Aaron Paul is here, and it's kind of a movie which scans at least a decade, if not longer, and it's quite something. It's an achievement. So yeah
it's not a perfect movie by any means, but it was absolutely quite an impact on all of us. And you know, I just looked it up. We did review that in episode 405, which is our Toronto Film Festival coverage part 3. So go back and check that out if you're really interested. Cool. Wow, what a time it is for movie fans. Let's talk about the two movies that we're going to review today. Then the first is The Dead Don't Die. The second is The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Should we tackle them in that order?
Yep.
Yes. All right, so The Dead Don't Die.
So I can introduce that. So Ohio-based filmmaker Jim Jarmusch is sort of a demigod in the independent movie film scene. He first came to prominence in the mid-80s with his movie Stranger Than Paradise. And since then, he's been very prolific. He's done movies such as Down by Law, Mystery Train, Coffee and Cigarettes.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Night on Earth. Only Lovers Left Alive, which came out a couple of years ago with Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton. He did a wonderful movie called Broken Flowers with Bill Murray, which is really should be sought out. And then last year he did a movie called Patterson with...
I like that one very much. Adam Driver.
With Adam Driver. And so Adam Driver and Bill Murray and Tilda Swinton are back in his new movie, where he kind of takes on a new genre. Now, in Only Lovers Left Alive, he kind of tackled his version of the vampire genre. This time he takes a stab at the zombie movie genre. And the cast is, you know, almost an embarrassment of riches. It has Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tom Waits, Chloe Sevigny, Tom Buscemi, Danny Glover, Kevin McCormick, and Caleb Landry-Jones, who we last saw in Three Billboards. So really a rich cast. And essentially, it's a zombie movie. It's about a peaceful town of Centerville, which finds itself battling a sudden invasion of zombie hordes as the dead start rising from the graves. And Bill Murray and Adam Driver play two police inspectors in this small town. And there are all these other peripheral characters on the side. Chloe Sevigny is another inspector, cop. And it's really this small independent filmmaker's take on the zombie genre. What do you guys think about it?
I mean, it's a bit of a puzzler, isn't it, this one? It has all the ingredients, but it doesn't quite, you know, the souffle doesn't rise, unfortunately for me. It's particularly disappointing in the sense of I couldn't quite find its wavelength. So I was tuning constantly to try and get myself onto its, you know, wavelength and tone, and just found myself kind of constantly irritated with how things weren't working for me. So maybe I was a little grumpy, maybe I was a little I had a little, you know, bit of higher expectation for this movie, but overall I couldn't escape the overall sentiment of disappointment from this. When you have this number of people and talent in a movie, I wanted it to be something special. So a little disappointment for me.
I love this movie.
Yeah, I thought you might.
This is completely a Rashmi movie. It's on the surface, it says it's a zombie movie on the box. To me, it's actually about something way deeper, which is about the way we live and the way that we consume.
Capitalism,
and so to me, it's genius in the way that it deals with that. And truly, the dead don't die. We're all dead at the moment. And I think that's what Jarmusch is trying to tell everyone, that we are all living in a deep sleep and we need to wake up. And how he puts that together is just genius. And it's dry and funny and it's sarcastic and it's just crazy. And I love it.
All of which were lost on me. I love that analysis. Okay, starts to make a bit more sense in that context. Yazdi?
I loved it too. I really like this movie. I think this movie is like, I've used this analogy a long time ago on one of our podcasts, but it's the equivalent of going, you know, making a run to the grocery store in a Lamborghini. So, you know, it's like he has the Lamborghini with him. These are top-rate actors, okay? Bill Murray. I mean, just watch the first 10 minutes of the movie and see Bill Murray's line readings. This is why he's a comedic genius.
Yes.
We kind of forget about, you know, he's kind of almost mythologized now, you know, as this, you know, cryptic kind of almost hard to reach kind of person, but his line readings are so good.
A lot of it is not in the line reading. A lot of it is just in the way he's reacting to someone else line reading.
So he has top talent. I mean, Chloe Sevigny and Tilda Swinton and all of these people. And so it's like the best car you could possibly be in. And so you're still going to the grocery store. It may not amount to much, but I still enjoyed that ride so much. And I like that. Maybe it's that I haven't seen that many zombie movies. I mean, I might have seen maybe 7 or 8 in my whole life. I haven't seen all 100 of them. But I really like, it's all completely deadpan. It's the whole movie.
It's played straight.
It's played straight and it's played deadpan. And it is a question of tone, but that tone completely worked for me. I was smiling and chuckling through the whole time. You know, there is what happens to the Tilda Swinton character. is such a gag. If you know Tilda Swinton, you'd be like, of course, that explains Tilda Swinton as a human being. That's who she is. So it takes a lot of liberties. The movie does these things a couple times, which is really dangerous, which is it breaks the fourth wall. I mean, it right. You know, and it actually breaks the fifth wall, where not only do the characters speak to you, but the characters are aware that they're in a movie. And they kind of let on that, and it shouldn't work. But it was really very charming.
It's cheeky.
For me. It's very cheeky and charming, and I like the fact that at the end of the day, you know, it kind of has to rely on those zombie tropes, you know, and you have to, you know, decapitate them. And I love that when you decapitate the zombies, blood comes off like this
puff of black smoke,
puff of blackish red smoke. Yeah. It's almost sublimated red, sublimated blood. So I know it doesn't rise as a souffle for more people, but for me, maybe because I didn't expect too much out of it, I was just chuckling along the whole time. I was just like, you know, ha, 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 that's kind of funny. That's kind of clever. I saw it as very, very, very dark humor the whole time.
I did too. And I think that it the reason why it didn't work for you, Joe, maybe if I can take a stab at that, is that it plays metaphorical and it almost plays a little bit precious.
Well, both of...
And the preciousness doesn't pay off.
All of the above. So I think, you know, the deadpanness, the metaphorical stuff is interesting because I didn't read into that. I took it a little too much at face value, and I kind of was trying to read it as this kind of offbeat comedy, and it's clearly not that. And I think for me, it was kind of an unfunny version of Shaun of the Dead, where
right.
it's not going for slapstick and capers, because I really thought it was. I mean, if I'm honest, you know, when the Tilda Swinton character kind of appears and she has all these martial arts skills, you know, I'm thinking of it as this kind of... No, but...
I'm laughing, yeah, just
me
thinking
too,
about
yeah.
it.
I'm thinking of it as this kind of offbeat, quirky comedy where, you know, these people have these, you know, hidden characteristics and they become surprisingly useful in an apocalyptic sense. Well, you know, that's kind of Shaun of the Dead type humor, right? I didn't read any of the stuff that you mentioned earlier. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe there's a completely different context here that I missed. So, yeah, I took it straight. That maybe that's my particular error. I don't think I'm alone in that. I'm looking at the reviews for this and they have been middling. So, you know, I think there's certainly a level of intellect required to kind of peel back the layers and understand what he's really saying as opposed to what he's depicting here on screen with these actors.
Yeah. And I do like, he's got a very nuanced style. I mean, I really loved Only Lovers Left Alive. And it was mm-hmm. one of those movies that was difficult to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm. To wrap your fingers around, yeah.
Well, no, also just to get access to it, right? Okay. Like, it came and
so
went.
You weren't being metaphorical.
No, I wasn't, actually. I wasn't being Jim Jarmusch.
You were speaking to me, not
speaking to you, correct. it was difficult to actually get access to be able to watch. But if you do get access to it, watch it. Because it's again, a very different way of conveying a vampire movie. And likewise, that's why I really enjoyed this one, because again, it is a very different zombie movie. I think the zombie is the gag. It really worked for me on all levels. I love the acting. I love the dialogue. I like the fact that they break the fourth and the fifth walls.
Can we talk about that? Because I couldn't stand that.
Oh,
okay. I think that...
It's going to end badly.
It's something that...
It's all going to end badly.
It's something that, as a running gag, you know, should work really well. But I've never even heard of breaking the fifth wall, but I know exactly what you're referring
to.
Well,
it's the fourth wall, an extra level of the fourth
right.
wall.
Right. Yeah. To me, I was like, really, this is gonna get like so self-aware and so meta that the preciousness came across to me.
Right.
I was like, okay, you know, someone's trying to be really clever here, and instead of enjoying it for what it was, I kind of folded my arms and thought, you know, don't muck around with me this much, you know.
Yeah.
I paid money. Well, I didn't pay money, but we saw a screening. But yeah, if I'd paid money to see this, I'd be like, come on, guy, dude, don't try and show off in that way. Just focus more on entertaining me. So I was irritated by that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of its jabs might seem like too superficial or kind of, you know, grabbing the low-hanging fruit. But, you know, the Steve Buscemi character is first introduced.
I love it.
Wearing a hat which says, Make America White Again. And yeah. then he has a dog called Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. But
which is hilarious.
And so you would think, you know, that this is a very left person making fun of the right. But look what happens to the Steve Buscemi character. There is a lot of contempt for that character. So it's smarter than it lets on to. You know, there is this very interesting about what happens to the Chloe Sevigny character in terms of how she behaves. So I think it lets on to make it seem like it's a piffle, but actually I think there is some heft underneath it, which may be lost because people just might be turned off. And I think they want this full-on zombie invasion movie, which it very reluctantly is.
But there's even like Rosie Perez playing a newsreader, and then the whole, you know, Joe, you and I always talk about the fact that news is not news anymore; it's entertainment. And so, again, I'm kind of surprised that bit didn't make you laugh so much, because it's exactly playing into that whole concept of what news is today or what news isn't. And then just here's something that was really interesting to me, which is. It's the first time we see Tilda Swinton in her real accent. She's actually Scottish. Mm. And actually hearing her in a Scottish accent was the weirdest thing ever because she never plays Scottish. And again, just that whole character who's she's an undertaker, but she's so nuanced. So I just, I love this movie. I love this movie. As much as I loved something like What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. It's the same wavelength.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's the same. Now, granted, maybe What We Do in the Shadows is more accessible
to
more people. And it is comedy, right?
It's funnier.
It plays it for comedy. But it's got that same, on the surface, it's a vampire comedy movie, but it's not. It's actually about
family.
Way more, yeah. or just, you know, life.
And about how we consume so much. I mean, there's this running gag that when somebody turns into a zombie, they kind of crave the one thing that they wanted their whole life.
And right.
It's, for me, I laughed out loud when one of the zombies was just going around, you know,
Starbucks.
Like asking for Wi-Fi.
Right,
somebody was asking for Wi-Fi. Somebody was asking for Chardonnay. Somebody was asking for coffee. You know, Ambien. Somebody was asking for Ambien.
It's
pretty clever.
It's very relevant. I want you to watch it again. Anyway. I don't know if I'll be able to make you watch it again.
I'm not super excited about that.
Yeah, but I think if you watch it through the lens of it's actually about more than it is pretending to be. I can wrap this one up. I absolutely love this movie.
9 out of 10. Wow.
I really like this movie. Just because it's so smart. And again, we're coming into summer now and it's all, you know, prequels and sequels and franchises, and just to see something a little bit different packaged the same is good.
Yeah. Yes, Dee.
I think this filmmaker is really taking a risk with the tone of the movie, and either that frequency is going to vibrate with you or it's really going to, you know, rub you the wrong way. It worked for me. It was really the right frequency. And this movie opened this year's Cannes Film Festival and it was in competition. So, you know, clearly there's some who hold it in high esteem. It's running not too good on the Tomato Meter.
50.
So, you know, I have a lot of fondness for it. I mean, anybody who has the good sense to know that, you know, Adam Driver, who's a pretty big man, to see him kind of, you know, fold himself out of a mini smart car. Okay, is the best side gag you can have, right?
So I mean, funny.
You don't need to
hilarious.
You don't need to do anything than to ask Adam Driver to kind of fold himself out of a little smart car. And that's funny. Maybe it's not, Joe, it's not making you laugh. But that was funny for me.
It's making you more irritated.
So anyway, it worked for me and I would have ordinarily given this a 7 out of 10. But because everybody is saying it's like nothing, it's a piffle, it doesn't work, all of this, I kind of feel a little defensive and I feel like I should, you know, defend it. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yay.
I mean, I came into this wanting to give it a 5 out of 10. And I think in the light in which I viewed it, I think it still is a 5 out of 10. If you're looking for kind of a comedic zombie romp in the vein of, you know, Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland or one of those kind of movies, you're not going to get what you want. But I think I will give it another shot. I think it could have done a better job, perhaps, of signposting some of the satire that you're bringing to me here. And again, you know, I think of the three of us, I always acknowledge to be the least in tune with the metaphorical and the most needed to be slapped around the face by a big wet fish of a plot in order to understand things. So yeah, not quite on my level. I guess I am intrigued by some of the things you've said. Okay, moving on then to the next movie, which is The Last Black Man in San Francisco. So,
and I'm so upset that I missed the screening of this, so I'm dying to hear what you both thought of this, especially given this has got a really high score at the moment on the Tomatometer.
Gosh, yeah.
And it just played at
Sundance, right? It won an award at Sundance, correct. But it might have played somewhere else as well.
I thought it played at Cannes as well, but anyway, yeah. Okay. So this is Jimmy Fails, dreams of reclaiming the Victorian home his grandfather built in the heart of San Francisco. Joined on his quest by his friend Mont, Jimmy searches for belonging in a rapidly changing city that seems to have left him behind. So this is a directorial debut by Joe Talbot, written, directed, produced, and also written by Rob Rickert. This is 2 hours running time by one of my favorite studios, A24, who I think always put their heft behind such good movies.
Well, they actually picked it up at Sundance, so they weren't behind its production. But okay. When it screened at Sundance, the reception it received there led them to buying it.
So. Okay. Good bit of e-entertainment news there, Joe. Thank you. So what did you guys think of it? This is definitely one I want to watch. So should I rush out and see this one?
This is a special movie. There's no question about it. There's also no question about the fact that this movie is not for everyone.
I'm sorry, I didn't mention who was in it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, sorry. So Jimmy Fails is Jimmy Fails. It's actually by the guy Jimmy Fails. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Majors, Tichina Arnold, Rob Morgan, Mike Epps, Finn Wittrock, and a whole host of others. Sorry, I didn't mention.
So it is a special movie. I think this is a talent to watch because the movie is shot in some kind of a state of hyper reality. It's very deliberately, I don't know how to explain it. I was super excited to watch this movie. It's not the movie I thought it would be. And I don't know the movie that it is. And I normally, I'm very cool with movies that don't necessarily run, you know, middle of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
This is way, way out of, you know, midstream.
Like Terrence Malick Strange or?
Even more, I think. It's even more, it's not just obtuse, but it's very deliberately obtuse. It's very lyrical. It's very poetic. There's so much strong musical accompaniment to the movie that I'm almost tempted to call it a musical, which it's not.
Wow.
And I've watched the whole movie. I still don't know what it's about. On the face of it, it's about a man's relationship with a home. And he's so obsessed with this home that he will do anything to keep the home. And I know it's a commentary about gentrification and about how, you know, as a result of commercialism, we are destroying these beautiful homes from the past. I understand that's what it's about, but that was not my takeaway from it. The last 5 minutes of the movie visually is easily some of the best things I've seen projected on a television, on a cinema screen. It's gorgeous to look at. There's so much I can talk about this movie, but at the end of the day, I can lie, but I won't lie. I will say this, I don't understand this movie. I don't know what it's about, and it didn't work for me, but it's special. It's very special.
Joe.
You know, it starts off quite experimentally. right? We have lots of slow-mo visuals, and yeah, the lyrical nature of it, I totally see what you're saying there. It definitely feels like it was inspired by kind of Spike Lee's earlier type movies. You know, there's this very stylized appearance to things. There's this very, Spike Lee's kind of trademarks, right? Where you have like, you know, the walking down the street with a camera.
Yeah.
Whereas it doesn't use those tricks at all, but it feels like there's a director trying to say, you know, this is my stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I do this and no one else does this, right? This is how I'm going to shoot my film. So it very much feels like, you know, somebody's trying to punch their way through into recognition. And like Yazdi, I struggled with what the movie was about, but something odd did happen, you know, probably about two-thirds of the way through. I feel like the first two-thirds of the movie were kind of abstract, very difficult to grasp, you know, get your arms around anything, very difficult to find something to care about deeply. And I'll be frank, I mean, you know, it lost my interest on a couple of occasions at that point. It had been a long day. Rashmi, I dropped you off at the airport very early that morning.
Okay, it was that day.
But something remarkable did happen in the final third of the movie where I did find it, you know, kind of deeply moving as it's what I perceived to be the crux of the story kind of played out, which was the relationship between this man and this house that was very, very dear to him for various reasons, kind of played its course through. So I did find myself ultimately engaged in what it was trying to tell me, but it's difficult. I mean, it really is. This is art house.
This is art house with a capital A, capital R, capital T. Yeah.
Is it like a ghost story?
No.
No.
It's not like that movie. Seen.
I think the only thing,
Dear White People has.
It's like Dear White People with like Beasts of the Southern Wild. You know how Beasts of the Southern Wild has, you know, this. It's a world.
Both movies, which I really liked.
It's like a world which doesn't exist right now.
Yeah.
But it's still.
There's something wrong with the water. You know, I mean, okay, there's something. Okay. But then it plays on that visually at some point, and then there really is something wrong with the water. But, you know, does that exist in the real world?
I'm so intrigued now.
I don't know. It's difficult material.
Is it set in modern times?
Yes, it's set in contemporary times. But the movie's marching to its own drumbeat. It's not like this. First of all, the whole movie has this dappled sepia tone, like brownish, yellowish tone. But it's I don't know, it's like watching somebody's film reel in their head. I can't even explain it. I mean, and the movie I know is reaching for a lot of the big themes. It's reaching for themes of, you know, toxic masculinity where, you know, two men who are just good friends cannot be just good friends. And the rest, like, they are constantly, there's this Greek chorus of, you know, guys who hang around their street constantly making fun of him and his friend. So I think it's commenting on that. There is some commentary on how, you know, about race in America and about violence, because, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but one of the characters in the movie dies and so much is made of it. And I felt nothing. I felt zero because I don't know this character. I mean, I've seen this character be on the screen a few times and it was very weird. And then he's dead and now everybody's so sad about it. And I'm like, I don't feel sad about this. I'm sorry if I'm a bad... Yeah.
It took me a couple of minutes to figure out who it was, who was that? I was really puzzling over like why there was so much fuss being made.
And so I think it's primarily about either about the friendship between these two guys or it's about this one, the lead character, Jimmy Fails. His great big love in the world is this house, which his grandfather has built. And he... It's kind of funny in the beginning because the home is owned by this couple and unknown to them, he kind of trespasses and kind of, you know, repairs the home because he's so attached to that home. And then through a series of events, those people can't live there anymore. So they break into the home and then they start living there and he starts repairing this whole house. So it's about this relationship between this man and this house. But I'm thinking this man never seems to have any work. He never seems to be earning a living. I too would love to just, you know, be in this beautiful home all day and just kind of try to repair it. I don't know. So I think the movie is very deliberately unrealistic. And while it's unrealistic, it's asking very realistic questions. So it kind of was a disconnect.
Yeah.
There's this whole part where he invites, towards the end, maybe I'm giving things away, but maybe not. He invites people over.
It looks like it won't help. It won't help anyway, yeah. So.
Where he invites these people over to watch a play, and yet it's not a rehearsed play. To the best of my knowledge, it turns out to be exceptionally impromptu. So is it a dream?
It's like a deaf poetry type moment.
Yeah. Is it a dream? Is it really happening? It's quite something. I mean, and like the last 5 minutes are just... I just want to like watch that in loop over and over again because it's so gorgeously shot. I don't know. I mean, I seldom... Like, I love Holy Motors and it doesn't get more obscure than that. But there's something so deliberately coded about this movie.
I have to go watch this now.
It's very coded.
I'm very intrigued.
Like, I still don't...
Because I'm not hearing you say it's awful, it was a waste of my time. No. Don't go and watch this. No, but
it feels like it feels like a very frustrating experience for us as viewers because it doesn't easily, especially for the first two thirds of the movie, reveal what it's about.
Right.
So
is it good acting?
Like, yes.
Everyone's performances are fine in this, but again, I think it's. I think in many ways it's deliberately crafted to be puzzling.
Yeah.
Mm.
And. Yeah. You know, that can go either way, right? Yeah. The last movie talked about is deliberately crafted to, you know, be frustrating. Well, you said it's got a metaphorical layer that's not really out there, right? I wished it had shown those cards and then pulled me into its world. This is another one which is buried behind another layer of, you know, and this is not just an abstract layer, but it's like a layer that's, you know, hidden in a box that's shut tightly, locked in a safe, in a dark room, in a prison somewhere that one can't access.
It's
right?
So coded. It's like, what are you saying? Come out and say it. And what was the relationship between the two? Are they just friends? Are they cousins? I didn't even understand.
It doesn't
something as simple,
seem specifically relevant, but I mean, yeah, then why write them in that way? So...
this is running at 95% on because the Tomatometer.
It's honestly unlike...
And 99% for the audience score.
I don't get that because at all.
It's honestly unlike anything you've seen. It's unlike anything I have seen.
But that doesn't make me want to rate it highly. And, you know, we'll talk about that in a second. But it's I really don't understand the nature of the score for this.
Bill Street could speak? If Bill Street could talk? Because that's kind of ethereal,
Totally. So it's totally like if Bill Street could talk, if you kind of removed all the plot elements and made it intentionally difficult to understand. But it is like that. It has a very gauzy, ethereal, kind of Vaseline-smeared lens kind of look through most of it.
Okay, score.
Donald,
score and
wrap up. Donald Glover is in it, and he plays the blind grandfather... Of Monty?
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. What did I say? Donald Glover? Yeah. No. Danny Glover is in it. I'll just say this one thing. There's a scene in this movie where they are on the public transportation. They're on the bus and they're going from one place to the other, the two friends. And this woman sits down and right across from him. And then this woman looks at him and I don't know, for a full 4 seconds. And then she says, Jimmy, is that you? And then he says, oh gosh, Ma, it's you. Like, I will not believe in 100 years that your mother would come down and sit in front of you in a bus and you would have difficulty recognizing it.
Maybe it's Ma in the essence of, like, Ma.
No, it's his mother.
Oh.
It's his mother. So, I don't know. I'm not saying this is an inept filmmaker. This is, like, really, you haven't seen anything like it. But he's very deliberately trying to create something. And either this is, like, a masterfully pieced together movie, which is way ahead of its time, or it's nonsense. Or maybe somewhere in between. And I kind of felt dumb coming out of it, not getting it. So I would recommend, because it's so exceptional, it's unlike anything else, I would give it a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is the cinematic equivalent of, you know, you go to one of those like modern art museum and you see, you know, a painting which is like a stripe. And everyone's looking at it and going, wow, what an amazing, you know...
Stripe.
piece of artwork, and I'm staring at this thing, and I'm like, some dude got a paintbrush and went, you know, one stroke, and suddenly everyone's calling it the Second Coming. I just didn't understand it or appreciate it for what it was. So it was a frustrating experience for me. You know, the Radiohead CD that,
yeah, it's very, right. Oh, I think that's the equivalent. That it's you the Radiohead CD
that, yes, you don't quite get what it's trying to be. You know, it's innovative in some way, but it's not appealing to your standard sense of melodious, you know, tunefulness. So, yeah, very frustrating movie for me. That said, I think the final third of it is a little bit more accessible. So, I did then ultimately find that part of the movie, you know, quite involving. So
yeah. Touching even.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 because it's not horrible. It's not far great. From it, yeah. It's a very generous 6 because I think entertainment value wise, I've struggled.
A24 has picked this up and good on them because, yeah, this is, you know, and then it's also co-produced Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's, right, company, and he's one of the producers on it. But, you know, again, is the movie making, I think superficially the movie is making a very strong political statement about how utterly destructive gentrification is. You know, it's happened in Brooklyn and it's happening, mm-hmm, it happened in Washington, D.C., and now it's happening in San Francisco, where these beautiful old homes, which are survived, you know, hundreds of years of American history, are being torn down. But even on that point, is the movie making the stance that squatting is the right alternative to that? It's kind of very, very jumbled. I mean, is it a call to arms that we should just go and illegally squat in places? I don't even understand. And then, you know, there is one, this is a very black movie in that all the characters are, you know, they're all black.
Right.
Except for the one character in the movie, the one white character in the movie, who is just absolute snake of a character. So, right, I kind of felt, you know, come on. Either, you know, don't make that person be white. That person didn't have to be white. Or have other characters in there so it doesn't come off feeling very one-sided. So, and I'm usually on the other side complaining about not enough black characters in a movie. So there's a lot going on here. There's a lot to kind of, you know, I don't know, dissect and try and better understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's wrap that up for today. Yeah, I don't know that you have any more insight than...
No, I'm very intrigued, though. I want to...
It's frustrating material, indeed. Mail at movieallers.com. Let us know what you think of this movie. I'd love to get some opinions out there. Twitter.com/movieallers. Instagram.com/movieallers as well. Let's wrap up for today. And there's always too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.